reporting from Marion County on KMUZ Turner. This is Waste Matters on the Air, the show that talks trash about waste and how to prevent it.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. It is the second Thursday of the month, so you must be listening to Waste Matters on the Air, KMUZ 88.5 and 100.7 FM, the show that trashes waste and how to prevent it. I'm your host, Alan Pennington, and I'm in the studio today with Nathan Good of Nathan Good Architects, and he's going to tell us a few things about green architecture, building, and whatnot. So, you folks out there remember I head up the Marion County Earthwise program, which is a free program for businesses or nonprofits who want to explore ways to reduce waste and conserve resources and hopefully save a little money too. We also offer a certification program that for these organizations can get should they wish to take the steps to achieve them. That would include such things as recycling, waste reduction, energy and water conservation, and green purchasing. So since I do the Earthwise thing and have this radio show, I like to combine the two together to bring you, I think, some pretty interesting people and businesses who just happen to be Earthwise certified. Because let's face it, not every organization out there, profit or nonprofit, are trying to do their best to be as environmentally sustainable as they can. The cool thing about Earthwise businesses is they have a third-party certification that says that they are doing certain things, important things, to be mindful of the environmental place that they hold in the world, which brings me to my guest today, architect Nathan Good here in Marion County, who's going to share some of his thoughts and wisdom with us. So, Nathan, thanks so much for coming in. I know you're a busy guy. Tell us a little bit about yourself. So how did, for example, you know, some of your background start with?
I went to school in California, Cal Poly San Luis Obispo, great school for architecture. And then I spent my senior year in Denmark, which was a fascinating experience. Country, it's like a small island, and they too were very concerned about their energy and their waste and very conscientious, but with a high degree of design. All the way through their architecture, their interior furnishings, and the products that they create for their home. So did you
notice that their the academic or the educational path that they would give you a student there was quite a bit different from, say, the architectural curricula that you were experiencing in the States?
Very much so. In the States, I would study in a design lab. We would be given design problems to solve, and we would spend, you know, 12, 14 hours a day in our studio. And in Denmark, the instructors were always encouraging us to go out and travel and visit the work of other architects. And, you know, in Europe, it's an amazing place to study architecture. We were, you know, assigned to places to go to in Helsinki and in Stockholm and throughout Europe and Istanbul and Madrid and Barcelona, Paris, Berlin. It was a really fantastic experience.
No, I think I'd rather just sit in a room for 12 to 14 hours a day with a slide rule. That's pretty fabulous. That would be very instructive, I would think. And what a great opportunity you had to do that.
It really was.
So at some point, Nathan Good kind of started going down the path of green architecture. You became a LEED certified architect. In fact, I have heard that you were the fifth person to get this certification back in 2000, somewhere around there?
Right around that, 1999, 2000.
Okay. So the LEED program, it's L-E-E-D. Tell us what that means.
It's an acronym, stands for Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design, and it's a green building certification program through the U.S. Green Building Council, which was formed about 10 years prior to 2000, right around 1990. Sometime around 1998, they recognized the need for a certified green building program in the U.S., and I was fortunate to be managing a very similar program through Portland General Electric at the time called EarthSmart. And the it's now called Earth Advantage, but it used to be called EarthSmart. And EarthSmart was a green building certification program sponsored and financially supported through Portland General Electric to encourage their customers to save energy. And what they found was the best way to create energy savings for their commercial customers was to package waste, indoor environmental quality, water savings and overall environmental responsibility into a green building certification program. So when the U.S. Green Building Council came out with the LEED certification program, we, meaning myself and Portland General Electric and my coworkers there, were in a great position to be able to offer both the Earth Advantage and Earthwise, Earth or Smart certification and LEED certification. So that was my early entry into the LEED program.
Mm-hmm. And it's amazing because it took a little while to take root, but it before you know it, there were LEED buildings starting to go up all over the country. And it was a very exciting time in the first dozen years of LEED, because it was people were learning about it and getting excited about it and doing projects. Would you agree with that assessment?
It was pretty amazing. Marion County was one of the very first participants in a pilot project for the LEED rating system through the U.S. Green Building Council, and at Portland General Electric through our EarthSmart program and through other entities, we were able to usher the Marion County Courthouse Square project in as a pilot project, from which we learned quite a bit. So it was both an EarthSmart certified building and one of the first LEED certified buildings in the U.S. There were about a dozen pilot projects. So most people don't know that about that project. And, mm-hmm. and since then, there are several thousand LEED certified buildings.
Mm-hmm. So there's certain levels that people achieve. Is mm-hmm. that correct? So when Marion County Courthouse Square back in the day when it was certified around pretty early, whatever it was, 2001, too, something
it
like
that?
It
was right around – well, it's actually even earlier than that. I think it was right around the 2000.
Okay.
We started working on it, I believe, in 98.
And I don't think there were levels at that point. Is that
there
correct?
There actually were.
Were there?
There was bronze, silver, gold, and platinum. And the Marion County Courthouse Square project was bronze, and since then the bronze level's just referred to as certified.
Right.
So
okay, and so there are several buildings now within the General Salem mm-hmm. area mm-hmm. That are LEED certified. And so what do you think is the most important thing about the LEED program? That we're getting that certification. Why is it important that businesses, our architects, our consumers embrace that?
Well, for one thing, one of the reasons that the LEED program was created was to reduce the amount of what we call greenwashing that was occurring in the industry. People claiming that they had designed and built green buildings, but were far from it. So, on one hand, it provided very specific criteria as to what constituted a green building. And then it provided tiers, the certified silver, gold, platinum tiers, to be able to recognize achievements of different levels of performance for a green building. Part of what it has done for the architects is it's provided very specific criteria of things that you can do in the design phase to achieve a green building. You have very measurable targets for energy performance and for water savings and for site stewardship and for indoor air quality. The benefit to the building owner is without that, you don't know if you're getting a green building or not.
Mm-hmm.
We pretty consistently hear of people who are using the LEED certification system to design buildings, but they decide not to certify for various reasons, and it's just not the same. Many times that those buildings have been audited and found that they did not achieve the level of performance in any one of the many various categories that they were designed to.
Mm-hmm.
Things happen during construction. There are budget reductions. There are budget overruns or cost overruns that result in budget reductions. So
yeah.
the LEED certification criteria gives you a path to achievement and a certain amount of comfort level on the part of the client that their building accomplished the things that they set out to do.
Mm-hmm. And I think for some businesses that do this almost on spec – to build something like that, they know that having a LEED certified building has a certain cachet,
mm-hmm.
and so it can command a higher price if mm-hmm. you're leasing and renting space inside mm-hmm. those buildings. So there's certainly a very positive attachment to mm-hmm. them. So I thought it would be kind of interesting when I was trying to figure out how to talk about architect stuff with you to kind of imagine taking a house or a building and starting from the ground level up till we get to the roof, trying to mm-hmm. think about what would an architect do? What would you design and think about that would be a green construction, say starting from the ground floor? So let's imagine a home. You want to do a house?
Sure.
Okay. So a house with bedrooms mm-hmm. and dining room mm-hmm. and a kitchen and all the typical amenities of a middle sized house.
Well, I could use my own home as a reference. My wife and I just finished the construction of a home that we're now living in. And one of the very first things that we do as an architect is we understand what our clients' needs are, how many bedrooms they need, what's their budget, what are their psychological needs for comfort, security, safety, space. You know, do they need views? Do they need higher ceilings, color preferences, material preferences? The other part that we do very early on before we start doing any design work is understanding the site. And that includes where does the sun rise at various times of the year? Where does it set? What's the sun path throughout the seasons? What's the topography, the vegetation? Where do the storms come from? In the Salem area, actually throughout the Pacific Northwest, daylight is very important to us. So we have to think about how can we get as much daylight into the interior of a home as possible. So, and then the other part that's important very early on before we start designing the home is who are our team members? Who and how are we going to go about the design for this home? The structural engineer, the builder. We may have a landscape architect involved. There may be an interior designer. The clients often will bring in some, you know, friends or family that they trust and get involved. So we try to identify how are decisions going to be made, who's going to make them, and what's the basis for decisions.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the pre-design.
Yeah, and I imagine that your needs would be different from a lot of other people's because, you know, for folks out there you may not know that Nathan is married to April Waters, who's a very well-known painter, artist in the area. And my guess, if she's going to be working at home, her needs, because she is a painter with light is very important to her, that would be a key element that, you know, the other folks might not need.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess you talk to your client somewhat before you started down this path.
Yeah, there's when your wife is your client.
Yes,
you need to listen very carefully.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And if she's listening right now, I'll give a shout out to hello April. And if you just tuned in, you're listening to Waste Matters on the Air, KMUZ at 88.5 and 100.7 FM. I'm Alan Pennington, and I'm speaking with Nathan Good of Nathan Good Architects, located here in Salem. And so we just walked through the ground level floor. So we're about ready to put in a foundation and put in plumbing and electrical. And so what is there anything special there we have to think about?
Big question. Absolutely. For my own home, we were on a sloped hillside. So the design of the foundation was very important, and I chose a structural engineer, somebody whose opinion I trust and respect, and they did a great job working with us to think about the topography of our land and how to actually minimize our home's impact on the land. So we have some elevated sections with columns that go down to concrete piers. The other part that's important is that we now know that there's a high probability of a 9.0 earthquake in our region within the next 50 years. We didn't know that 20 years ago. We know that now. Our codes are being adjusted. It was very important to us to have a home that would be able to withstand a major earthquake. With our home on a hillside, it became even more important. So we have a very substantial concrete foundation on our underneath our home.
Okay. So foundation is important. Are there other considerations for maybe a home, maybe not your house, your home, but other places you've built where your foundation was something of maybe an energy sink or played some factor into the cooling heating of the facility, or was that's not really that's further on up the up in height?
No, that actually applied to our home as well because it's on a hillside. We cut into the hillside and we used a material called insulated concrete forms, ICFs, and they were like styrofoam building blocks, and they were the formwork for the concrete. So we have two bedrooms downstairs that are actually built into the hillside. And the earth is very – when you're that far down in the earth, it's very stable temperature. It doesn't fluctuate very much higher or cold. So those are very comfortable rooms, but we still have insulated concrete walls for those the foundation of those rooms. In Central Oregon, we've designed homes that have used ground source heat system where they run loops through the ground, and that actually is like a preheat for their heat pump during very cold weather. Not really an applicable technology for the Willamette Valley where we live.
Mm-hmm.
But in colder climates, it makes a lot of sense.
Yes.
A home that we designed over in Hawaii is being completed right now. Their termites are important consideration. So we designed a foundation that to minimize the impact that termites may have. And it, too, will be a concrete home, again, so that the termites don't threaten and eat the wood over mm-hmm. time.
Okay, so we've got a foundation built at our home mm-hmm. now. We're going to start putting up some walls. What are some considerations there?
Well, let's talk about why waste matters.
Okay.
One of the factors there is that we can build walls with the wood studs on 24 inches on center rather than 16 inches on center. So that saves quite a bit of lumber when you're building a home, and it also improves the energy efficiency. That reduces the amount of thermal bridging that occurs through the wood stud walls. Now, to do that, though, it's best if you increase the size of your drywall to like 5/8-inch drywall on the inside. You want to make sure that the structural sheathing on the outside is nailed properly as well, so that those walls are just as sturdy, if not more sturdy, than they would be otherwise.
Okay, so let's make this clear for all of our listeners out there. So you're basically talking about that air exchange between the interior and exterior, and so you're trying to create this barrier from that exchanging quickly because it's going to happen somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And so by making the studs further apart, there's less transference of heat.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we've got some space in there. What are we filling that space with? Is it just air? Are we putting in foam? Are we putting in fiberglass? What are you going to put in there?
There's a lot of different insulations that you can use in there. For my own home, I used a blown-in fiberglass. It's called a bib insulation, B-I-B, blown-in blanket.
Mm-hmm.
And for the floors, we used open web trusses so that we had space to run all the plumbing and the electrical. And then for the roof, we did 14-inch deep truss joists. And for the roof, we used 3.5, maybe 4 inches at times of closed cell spray foam, and then filled the rest of the cavity with blown-in fiberglass. And the reason we did that was because it was an unvented roof. And it also saves quite a bit of material. You're not doing a false ceiling. The drywall is fastened directly to the bottom of the structural members that define the roof.
Mm, okay. And so you unvented roof, so it's solid?
It is solid with the structure and the insulation mm-hmm. and the drywall and the top level of plywood sheathing and then the roofing material.
Okay, so now we've suddenly jumped from we have walls and now we've got a top. We've got a top over our
heads. Amazing how fast that happens.
Yeah, boy, we built it in less than half an hour.
If only.
So now we've got a roof over our head and it's really, really tight because we've got mm-hmm. we're just not moving a lot of air from the inside and the outside that we don't want to move. Mm-hmm. So we've got some gaps, though, that we just can't avoid. We've got doors. We've got windows.
And we want to seal those up real tight. We want to use a lot of caulking and a spray foam gun and mechanical connections as much as we can to seal that air. And then what's real important, Ellen, is that when you have a home that's this tightly sealed, you must come in with a heat recovery ventilator to provide fresh ventilation to the home. It's called a heat recovery ventilator because the exhaust air is actually warming the cooler air that's coming in, or vice versa during the summer.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you've got that. And so do your windows open? Will they open up, or you got them where they're pretty much going to be non-operable?
We love fresh air ventilation. We live in a climate here in Salem where we can open up our windows. Well, I love to sleep with my window open year-round.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a combination of both fixed and operable.
Okay. So now we've got our shell, our box complete. Now, what are we putting on the roof? Do we have regular composite shingles? Do we have metal? What do you have up there?
We have metal. And the reason we have metal is for longevity and for fire protection. Our home is right next to a City of Salem park with large oak trees, and we want our home to be as fire resistant as possible. That's all part of the resiliency planning. And it's real easy to have solar electric panels to a standing seam roof. You really can add them to almost any roof.
Mm-hmm.
But in our case, it's such a simple roof that the standing seam metal was very cost effective to the comp shingle roofs. And I'll just throw out there too, every new home should be plumbed for solar electric. If you choose not to do it now, at some time you may want to. So
okay, be thinking ahead on that. So are you guys going to put something up on those roofs?
We did. We bit the bullet and installed a 10-kilowatt PV system. And I'm delighted to share that we did not have an electric bill from PGE for 5 months last summer. And we do not have any natural gas in the home, so hopefully we'll be able to achieve net zero energy on an annual basis before too long.
Excellent. Well, that's really good to hear. So you've got all these things now. You got your box complete, and it's almost net zero, or could maybe it is. Maybe you were even feeding the grid. So what about anything else on your property, though, that you're going to think about? I mean, have you landscaped it? What have you done? Or have you got any water features that control runoff? What do you got there? Anything special we need to think about on our property?
Well, one of the costs to pay for putting the solar electric on the roof now was that we don't have any landscaping in. So that'll come this summer.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll work on that. There's a landscape architect that we've worked with, does a great job, and he and his wife have come up with a wonderful landscape plan, and we will start to implement that maybe within a month or so.
Okay. So did you have any trouble finding the right materials that you needed for this building?
I did.
You
mm-hmm.
did?
Mm-hmm.
Is it just because the type of construction that you did is uncommon, and so the materials weren't available, or because – Why?
So it was mainly because we had a very tight budget,
mm-hmm.
and we chose to do quite a bit of the work ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have taste. As an architect, there are things that I do for my clients that I'd like to do for my wife and myself. And so finding cost-effective ways to accomplish very similar effects was challenging.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay. So, one of the things that we're about, doing LEED construction, whether we're talking about just, typical green architecture or pursuing that LEED certification, is that it can be a pretty high sticker price. How do we get that price down? How do we manage to, as opposed to only more expensive homes can be green? How do we turn that so that all the stick houses that are going up in a, somebody, when Joe Bob wants to build a subdivision, he says, I'm going to put it, I think I can get 40 lots in here. And so, so how do we get that so that that level goes up as opposed to just building to code?
Mm-hmm. Well, the cost for building a LEED certified home has come down dramatically in the last 10 years. And my home is an example too. Our home will have been built for less than $200 a square foot, and we are applying for LEED certification at the platinum level. So sometimes simple results in environmentally responsible.
Mm-hmm.
There, almost every home that we've designed in the last 12 years, would qualify for LEED certification without our clients even saying, I want to be platinum or gold or anything of that nature. In Oregon, we have very stringent energy codes. They could be more stringent than they are, but compared to the rest of the nation, some states don't even have energy codes. So with very little work, a homeowner can achieve LEED certification. Actually, I should say with very little cost and possibly no additional cost, a homeowner in Oregon could achieve a LEED certified home. Up in Portland right now, the hottest market for LEED certified residential units is the apartment market. They're finding the very cost-effective ways to build apartments. And as you mentioned earlier, that those will rent faster and for more money than others.
Right.
So that's kind of like a no-brainer for many of the large apartment buildings going up in Portland right now.
Well, I think one of the great things about the whole LEED process is, even if some organizations or people don't follow them, it has paved the way. It created a standard, and it became a benchmark, and provided – there was a whole bunch of research into, you know, what makes a building green, how do you do it. So there's a lot of wealth of experience that has become available to – pretty much your average Joe architect out there, who, I mean, I'm sure every architect that's going through getting a license these days knows a lot about LEED, whether they become a LEED certified architect or not. But there's a lot of techniques and skills that have been imparted. And do you see the future still more research going into to build a better mousetrap, as they used to say, on the home or building scale?
Well, I think one of the exciting things is that there's been so much – there's been a revolution, really, in the design and construction industry. And I look forward to the day, and it may be in 5 to 10 years, where we don't need to call them green buildings anymore. They're just the way we build, that all buildings are green buildings. Students graduating from the University of Oregon come away with an amazing amount of knowledge about green construction. It's the one or two rated school in the nation pretty consistently in sustainable design. So we're fortunate to have that pool of graduates available to the architects in the area. It's probably the second leading revolution in architecture in the last 20 years, with the first one being the role of computers in design.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. Well, we're pretty lucky to have you here in Marion County there, Nathan. Is there anything we missed? Because we're kind of running out of time here.
We could go on and on.
I know. I think there's a lot of...
Let's just put the music on and keep talking.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that at some time we'd like to have you come back and talk about some of your projects around the country, because you have done stuff all over the place. From Hawaii to... Let's go east. How far east have you gone? I know you've been in Arkansas.
I have been in Arkansas. That's right.
But you've gone further east than that.
Colorado. Actually, no further east than Arkansas.
Oh.
No, that's not true. Ohio.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ohio. Well, we won't count that.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, Arkansas, yeah. Colorado, Mexico. So
yeah, that's a lot of stuff. Yeah.
No, we're real fortunate. Love what we do.
Yeah, I see that. And if you show up at the Sustainability Luncheon, Earthwise Sustainability Luncheon, all you folks that are listening, you could actually meet our one and only Nathan Good and some of his crew right there in person. So we have run out of time today, and I would like to thank our guest, Nathan Good, for sharing his time and knowledge with us today. You've been listening to KMUZ Reaching Parts of Marion, Polk, and Linn counties via 88.5 and deep into Soul Central Salem at 100.7 FM. So join me next week, or excuse me, in 2 weeks here on January 25th. It's 1 o'clock, where we'll trash talk and talk trash about ways to avoid trash during another fabulous episode of Waste Matters on the Air. And of course, KMUZ.org's website has podcasts archived of all of our shows and many others. Should you want to hear this again or call up your friend and say, hey, guess who was on the radio yesterday? It was Nathan Good. So, and it's right there. So you can find that on KMUZ.org.